Welcome back to Ed Speaks, our 26th episode. We're seeing our coverage of The Atom, plus we have Where's Head Going, plus Ed's Mailbag, and my thoughts. Stay tuned.
Just kick a little something for them cars that be bumping.
Yeah, right, but we need a beat that they can front to. Oh, that word. Be funky. You know what I'm saying? Cars ride by with the
performance system. Hello, greetings and hi. This is the Head Speaks Podcast, a proud member of the Headcast Network. I am your host, Aaron Moss, also known as Head. Welcome to Head Speaks, where I'll be talking about comics, movies, and basically anything geeky. But without further preamble, let's get the show started.
12 o'clock at night with your windows down. Headlights breaking because your battery's drained. Armor roll on your tires and a big gold chain.
As I said at the top of the show, welcome back to episode 26 of Head Speaks. First up, we're going to continue our coverage of The Sword of the Atom with the second issue.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends.
The Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is...
What's in Head Long Box?
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind. The world's greatest super friends.
Superhero scientist Ray Palmer, trapped at 6 inches tall in the Amazon rainforest, the Sword of the Atom.
And here we are with the second part of the Sword of the Atom. A quick little note, I think I forgot to mention last time, I bought this series years ago when I first got into comics, because it's the Atom and it's awesome. And my wife knows I'm an Atom fan, I'm a Firestorm fan. So for Christmas, not knowing what to get me for sure, she went out to the comic shop and she ended up buying the Sword of the Atom miniseries for me. So I think I may have two copies now, which, double the fun. So if I finish both the books, see if I sell my original set. If not, I definitely got a copy of this now. So it makes me happy. Anyways, just a little thought I want to throw out there. Let's go and get on with today's issue. Sword of the Atom number 2, entitled A Choice of Dooms. Cover date was October of 1983. But as my buddy Shag is fond of saying, if you wanted to buy this fresh off the newsstand, you would hop in your time pool and go back to July the 28th of 1983. And when you go, take 60 cents. The editor of this was Dick Giordano. The writer was once again Jan Strand. Artist Gil Kane. Letterer Jasper Saldino. Colorist Thomas J. Zucco. And the cover was done by Gil Kane. And this was reprinted in the Sword of the Atom trade paperback from 2007, which reprinted the 4-issue miniseries plus the 3 specials I'll be covering later on. I don't own that one myself, but I do plan on buying it as soon as I can. Just have them all in a nice bound format. Anyways, the synopsis for this issue. We start off where last issue ended, with Terran and the Atom facing off with an army of rats. Suddenly, gas starts entering the room, knocking the two men out. Meanwhile, Daguerreus tells the king how the two men will make fine gladiators. Rey is locked up and thinks about how he picked up some of the language on the right end, and after a few more days, he should have it down. After weeks of being locked up, he's finally given a new costume and sent out to fight. Side note, the costume he's given is the one that we've seen on the first cover and this cover. His new Sword of the Atom costume. His opponent, he finds out, is a blinded Terran. When the crowd sees what happened, they begin turning on the king for his cruelty. Pograr, one of the trainers, ends up helping Terran and Rey escape as the crowd rushes the stage. He takes them to a frog that is awaiting them, along with Princess Lythwin. As the guards rush him, the Atom tries to hold the guards back so Terran and the princess can escape. But Pograr says that he's not saving Terran, but the Atom. The guards take Pograr to the king, who he tells that the people have turned against him when they saw he blinded a prisoner for support. The king is confused by the accusations. Back in the forest, Ray thinks about how he got here in the events of issue 1. When they stop, Ray tells Leithwin his story, and she relates theirs to him. They are from another planet. Morlaid was established to be a penal colony for political undesirables. Without support from home, their technology started failing, and they started becoming more barbaric. Then they started splitting into warring tribes. Her father wishes to unite them, while Duragis, the advisor, thinks it can only be done via conquest. Leithwin says that her dad's advisor has turned the king into a cruel man obsessed with his dreams. While talking, Terran yells for help as he's confronted by a lizard. Atom throws the sword into the lizard's mouth to scare it off, but then the creature is felled by a barrage of poison arrows by Terran's band, who's arrived. Meanwhile, back in Morlaid, the king tells his advisor that he can deal with Poeranger as he sees fit. Terran is introducing the Atom to his group, and the Atom is welcomed into the tribe. Again, back in Morlaid, we find Poeranger being hung and thirsty, which is driving the city even further against the king. Duragis takes the prisoner some water and tells him that Kallax's cruelty has not gone unnoticed, and soon he'll be freed. He says there's talk of rebellion, which the town folk overhear, which fans the flames revolt even more, which makes Duragis smile. Back in the woods, Leithwin tells the Atom how even away from their home planets, class prejudice still rule, and it took a while to overcome that to admit her feelings for Terran. Terran tells the pair that he was betrayed by one of his own people. Now that he's blind, Atom will have to lead his men. He also makes a comment about how the forest is a dangerous place for the weak, careless, and dun-dun-dun, disabled. As the Atom leaves Leithwin to try and talk sense to the despondent Terran, the Atom is cold-cocked by one of Terran's men, Voss, who believes the Atom is working as a spy for the king. They fight a little as Voss is knocked next to his poison arrows, which he grabs and threatens Ray with. Cut to the Loring Palmer house, where Jean ends up calling up Paul, you know, the guy she's making some schnooky with in the front seat of her car last issue, just to have someone to talk to. Being a kind, wonderful human being, Paul offers to come over to comfort Jean. To be continued. And that's the synopsis for this issue. Now for my thoughts. We start the cover. Once again, a very nicely done cover. We have Ray Palmer the Atom in his new Sword of the Atom costume, holding a sword, facing off, it looks like about four routes, looks like in a sewer system. It's actually probably the prisons he was in. But there's some running water down here, and it looks kind of like a sewer to me, but Gil Kane and Jan Strand, Sword of the Atom. Again, I'm not familiar with Jan, I am familiar with Gil Kane, and I find it, I don't know, funny, a little odd, whatever, telling, I don't know, that normally the writer gets top credit. Since Gil Kane's a more popular, well-known artist, he gets top credit on the cover. I think that's interesting. Again, I do like this logo for Sword of the Atom. It's a Sword of the Atom. It kind of starts and ends real big and tapers down the middle. In the middle, where it says of the, there's a short shut in between them with a nuclear, with the Atom symbol around it. Miniseries 204. Again, the bottom corner says the new DC, there's no stopping us now. Again, it's a very nice cover. It tells us, you know, it doesn't want to tell us anything about the story, but this is pretty much, it could be a scene out of the book. Again, I like Ray's costume here. It's like his old costume, but a bit different. It's got the top off of his mask, so his hair shows. And the only little quibble I have with his costume is he's got, I'm not sure it's beads or coins or what around his neck. He's got some extra gorm around his neck. I think that's a little overdone. I don't know if it needs that. I think the costume would be better without that little color there, but other than that, it's a great costume. It's got the Adams red and blue, but it's a bit more of a, if you will, modern for an 80s comic design. And if we flip open to the first page, it's an advertisement for Q-Bert, the video game cartridge for the 2600, which I had myself. I had the 2600. I think I had Q-Bert. I don't know if I had Q-Bert for the Atari or the Intellivision. Q-Bert, I used to play that at the Chuck E. Cheese in the town nearby called Merced. That and Super Pac-Man were the games I loved growing up. So that's why we don't want to comment on this ad. And then we go into the book, and as I said, it starts off with Ray and Taran facing down an army of rats. And again, it's like I say, it's only the first page, and all of a sudden they start getting gas pumped in. Ray comments how, you know, yeah, the rats avoid the gas and missed a smelting before and survived. And then they pass out. And at this point, Ray's still in his Adam costume. Ray? Ray's a different character. Ray Palmer, the Adam, is still in his Adam costume that's torn up from being hit by lightning and crashing in the forest. The top of his mask is ripped off, exposing his hair, and one of his shoulders is ripped. His right shoulder is ripped, it looks like. Costume's seen better days. One comment I do want to make on this is that during my recap and reading some of this, I do stumble over the names, or I pause over them as I get ready to say some of the names, because they're aliens, and they all have weird-sounding names. Taran's the most normal, easy-to-pronounce name for me, so if I pause and stumble over some of these names, bear with me. My next comment I want to make is, again, my wife's a big Game of Thrones fan. She got me into it. I read all the books. I've seen all the episodes. Dorajus reminds me very much of Varys from Game of Thrones. If you've seen Game of Thrones, you know what I'm talking about. What do you think? Anyways, as we go along, Ray here on page 3 says that how he's picked up some of the language on the right end. A few more days, he can have it down pretty well. At first I was wondering about that, what could actually happen. But seeing how Ray's a really smart guy, and I do hear, I have experienced it myself, but I do hear the best way to learn a language is to get immersed in it. Like, y'all learn Spanish, live with a Spanish household for a while, and you'll pick it up rather quickly. So I think the same thing applies here. He's in the land of Morlaid, and the only thing he's hearing is whatever language they're speaking, Morlaidian, I guess. So I guess being immersed in, that's what I think he's hearing. And when they're referencing things, he can kind of piece together what they're saying. And he can learn the language, so that's interesting. And then again, here on page 3, the fourth panel down, they throw him some clothes, they get cleaned up, it's time to earn your keep. And over the few weeks he's been here, apparently they've made him a new costume or repaired his old one, I'm not sure which it was. They fixed up the sewn shoulder. Not knowing what his costume was supposed to look like, they left the head exposed. Not the head, but the hair exposed. And again, they added those little discs around his neck. I don't know if this was coins or trinkets or what it is. But seeing how it's a barbaric type place, a very Conan world, if you will, I can accept that. I don't know, I think those kind of throw it off a little bit, but what do I know? So anyway, they march Ray down to the gladiator pits, and well, as I said, this is very much a sort of sorcery, a very gladiator-type thing. He's thrown into the arena, and you got people saying, spear and shield, spear, spear, a sword, give the challenger a sword. Throwing out weapons he should, you know, use. And some guy stands up and says, sword it is. For this match, only the finest weapons will do. Here, take mine. And mind you, use it well. So this guy, I'm not sure if this is supposed to be the king. I can't really tell. He's in shadows. And all Morlaids look like to me. Sorry, that's kind of racist. but anyways, who this guy is, he's throwing Ray his sword to use. And out from one of the openings comes Taran. He's got a blindfold over his eyes. And he's like, I don't think Ray knows he's blind at this point. He's just blindfolded. And Ray's like, Terran, surely they don't mean... And Terran's like, yes, Adam, this is Kylik's final joke on us. A forced battle to the death for the amusement of his royal subjects. If we don't fight, innocent men will be put to death. They've ensured I'll lose, as you can see. Or are you too? And Ray's like, no, I won't fight a man who can't see. So he takes the blindfold off. And that's why I'm thinking he doesn't realize that Terran is blinded, because he takes his blindfold off, so if he's going to have to battle, he wants Terran to be at an equal advantage. And we get the shocking reveal that Terran's eyes have been poked out. Again, his eyes are, there's black around the eyes. I'm assuming it's supposed to be blood. This is, I believe, a code-approved comics. So, again, this was back in the 80s when most comics could approve, so they made blood black, so it wasn't as offensive, I say, in quotes. And the king stands up and he's like, blind, but I didn't. And his daughter thinks the worst of him automatically. She's like, father, how could you? And the people in the crowd, they start booing, like, they cut out his eyes, they blinded him. Unfair. And they start booing, you know, everyone starts booing and going down on the king because they feel that he blinded Terran for the battle. And one guy in the crowd, he's like, we'll have none of this sport. Boo, Kylik. You've gone too far in your cruelty, despot. Boo. And this is the point where I say that people rush the field and they go rushing where the king's at. And the Adam takes his moment to escape with Terran. And again, here at the bottom of page 5, we finally reveal that the trainers help him escape, and also waiting for him on a frog that he's to travel with is Princess Laethwen. So at this point, you find out more. There's more between Terran and Laethwen than we imagine. Or maybe we imagined it, I don't know. I don't remember what I originally thought when I read this 20, 30 years ago. But it is interesting here at the bottom of page 6 when the Adam offers to hold him back and Pogar, the guard, or trainer, tells him, you know, it isn't Terran I'm saving, stranger, it's you. Hurry now, no arguments. We'll meet again in this world or the next. There's a thought box down here as Adam thinks, it isn't Terran I'm saving, it's you. Hogar's word rang in Adam's mind as the trio raced for this relative safety of the jungle. And I say a thought, but there's actually a narrative box telling us that Adam's thinking about how this trainer is willing to sacrifice himself to save a total stranger that he thinks the stranger can help him out. And then we get to the king thinking about, you know, they bring Pogar to the king, and you're like, why did you kidnap my daughter? And I like this. He's like, you give her away, sire. You did it yourself when you blinded the rebel. And again, as I said, the king's astonished by this. He doesn't know why people think he's that bad. He's like, he thinks I would offer the torture of Doom Man as entertainment? And the people, they believed it too. They raised their arms against me as well as they should if it were true. Which tells us that while the king may be deluded and he may have fallen under the grasp of his advisor, giving some bad advice, he's not a bad sort. I mean, he's actually, as he says here, if he is the kind of guy that would blind a man just for sport, he should be, you know, taken out. So this tells us that the king's actually a good guy and someone's working against him. Someone is working to make the king look bad, which we're going to find out here in just a minute if you haven't figured it out yet. And then we go along, we get a two-and-a-half-page or so recap of the first issue. Seeing how this was a monthly comic book, as I said, I don't know if we needed a two-and-a-half-page recap of the last issue, but I guess, I say, it seems like if you want that, you go back and read, someone probably read the last issue, you go back and look at it if you need to. But again, we get a nice little recap again of Ray catching his wife making time with Paul Hogan. There are fights. And we do get here on the second page of the recap where Ray says that, you know, she turned her back on him. Later, he was telling her he's going on a research trip to South America. She didn't care. She didn't bat an eye. Whereas we see that she's laying in bed crying. But Adam, Ray Palmer, didn't know that, so... To him, she didn't seem to care. She had his back to him, ignoring the scenes from his point of view. So, I mean, that was kind of interesting. He erased thought on it. But instead of the rest of this, we find out, you know, he gets on a plane, by some dope smugglers. They knock him out. He changes to the Atom. A stray bullet kills the pilot. The hull is struck by lightning. Damaged control belt. He fell. Smugglers fell to the ground. He was found by the Boundsmen. And so forth. And we get caught up to this issue. And then we get Wythewind's. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. But it's not like she's real, so I can't offend her or anything. Anyways, Wythewind tells her origin, how they got here. And we find out that they're aliens, and they were a penal colony, as I talked about earlier in the synopsis. And again, we get the flashback with the rounded bubbles, something I talked about previously. Something that was big in a lot of these comics from this time frame. Flashback stories, a lot of times they would do rounded bubbles, whereas the actual story pages would actually be squared bubbles, for lack of a better word. But again, as she's telling us that her father's advisor, DeRageous, she doesn't trust him, she never has. We'll come back to that here in just a minute. We'll circle back to that whole thought process. I'm not trusting him. I don't trust him either. Of course, I think I made that clear when I said he reminds me of Varys from Game of Thrones. But moving on. And then, like I said, we see Taryn facing down some sort of iguana or lizard-type creature. And since he can't see him, I guess all year he heard the creature come up on him. And Adam says, you know, a blind man in the jungle. He'll have to be under someone's protection every minute as he saves Taryn from the lizard. So again, I mean, it's letting you know that Taryn is in danger of... I think it's kind of setting it up what we're going to see in the future. I won't get too far ahead of myself, but it's kind of telegraphing, I think, here, that, you know, letting us know that he's in danger, that he's got to be protected all times if he's going to survive being in the jungle, being blind. Rey meets Taryn's band of rebels, if you will. Rey threw his sword into the lizard's mouth to scare him off. And right after he did that, the lizard was pelted with a bunch of little arrows. Apparently had poison on it as it killed him. And then, as I said, we're back at the throne room where Daenerys is telling the king that they've captured the guard that helped him, or the trainer that helped him escape, Pogar. And the king's too, you know, he's beside himself with the worry about his daughter being missing, being out of the city, and also about who ordered the rebel blinded, because that set the people against him. He's trying to figure out who, you know, who's responsible for, basically trying to turn his people against him. So he tells his advisor to go, you know, and take care of Pogar however he thinks best. And this is where I said earlier that, you know, Loiatha doesn't trust Daenerys, and she has good fit to see why. Because he got the smile on his face as the king's telling him, you know, go take care of me, I trust you. And he's like, oh, I'll take care of your majesty. And you can just, if we had more of a panel of this page, you'd see him wrinkling his hands together, rubbing his hands together, going, but we don't, so. Then we have the page where Rey is meeting and talking with the band. Taryn's rebel band, not the band playing music. But Taryn's introducing him, saying, you know, these guys die in the Atom. And one thing, I forget if I mentioned it already, but it's just kind of odd that he's going by the Atom when his real name is Rey Palmer. They're not calling him Rey. They're referring to him as the Atom. He doesn't have a secret identity anymore. He's given up that life. Oh, he's given up life at this point. But this is a jungle where, you know, he's stuck at 6 inches high, where he's a bunch of other little people. One thing I wonder about is why they're calling him the Atom, or Adam instead of Rey. Why he's not going by his real name. I mean, they've given his costume back. And don't get me wrong, I love the costume design. I think I love the Adam's costume. What's one thing I miss on the Legends Tomorrow show, but that's another story entirely. I love the way the Rey's costume looks. I like this new version with the top of his head exposed. And, I mean, maybe that's why he's going with Adam, because he's wearing his Adam costume. It's just something that struck me as kind of odd, maybe question, you know, why he's going by Adam instead of Ray. Maybe we'll find something for the end of the series. I don't think so. It was just an artistic choice, since he is Adam, or the Adam. I think the writers wanted to play with that and use his name, his hero name, as his miniature name. I mean, that's why, too, when he's Adam, or I'm sorry, when he's down to 6 inches high, he thinks of himself as Adam, so that's how he introduces himself. As I'm talking this out, I'm kind of working out maybe why they're doing it. Just something to know. If you guys have any thoughts on that, definitely let me know. You can send me an email to head@headspeaks.com and let me know your thoughts on, you know, why you would think Ray's going as the Adam instead of as Ray Palmer or Ray. Well, I think we have this little one-page interlude, if you will, with Taryn introducing his team to Adam. And we meet his right-hand man, Voss, who, again, Lithuana? I keep mispronouncing her name. He's kind of a, I don't know if he's a scumbag. Taryn's riding with Ray, I'm sorry, with Adam, and Leotha is riding with Voss, and Voss is like, "Ah, oh, princess, I knew I'd feel your arms around me, but I didn't think it'd be so soon." Kind of scummy, kind of, you know, he's hitting on his best friend's girlfriend while, you know, the best friend's been blinded. William Arthur tells him, "Hush, Voss, talk like that doesn't help anyone." And they're back into the Morlaid, where we see the trainer up on a cross. And we got people roaming the streets, you know, saying how it's inhuman, how, you know, punishing is one thing, but torturing is something different. And they're blaming Kallik, the king, for this. He thinks that he's trying to intimidate him. They think he's gone mad and demented. And here's where I was talking about earlier that Leotha's probably correct not to trust Dejerus. We see him up in his tower, watching down, going, "Yes, enough of gathered. Now is the time." And as the guard comes to bring the trainer water, Dejerus says, "Well, give me the water, I'll take it down." And everyone watches, you know, Dejerus, the king's advisor, mouth the step, and he tells him, "Be brave, Polgar. Selic's cruelty is not gone unnoticed. I'll be free to this torture soon. Manus and Selic's court are outraged. There have been talk of rebellion. Serious talk." And he's saying this loud enough that people nearby can hear him. So the town folk are hearing the visor, the king's right-hand man, talking about revolt, about not liking what the king's doing. And he tells them that Kallik's telling the trainer, he's like, "We'll pin it into Kallik's despotic reign. There'll be a new order, and I promise you, you'll live to see it. Soon!" And as Dejerus is leaving, I mean, there's two panels here of him walking away, people watching. The first one is an extreme shot. His hands are together, his cloak's over him. And then the last panel is a close-up of his face as he's looking back, kind of grinning evilly. I just know he has his hands together under his robe, rubbing them together. Again, this is a sword and sorcery type comic, but we are dealing with Adam. This is very much of a supervillain look on this on Dejerus' face. And then, again, we're back, as I said, with Adam and Taryn and Lothan. And Lothan, you know, again, we find a little more about her and where they come from. As I said, it's sword and sorcery. It's very much... No, it's sorcery, but sword and one cloth, whatever. But we find out, you know, she is in love with Taryn, but due to class warfare, I mean, these are an alien people, alien culture. But again, just like us, there is class warfare, there is class, you know, the haves and have-nots shouldn't be together. Like some people feel around, you know, on Earth. So they fit right in. And we get from Taryn that he's been betrayed by one of his people. Again, we don't know who it is. Honestly, it's been, oh my lordy lord, it's been 20 some odd years since I read this book. I'm thinking this is his secondhand man, Voss, is who betrayed him. But we'll find out. Again, I don't remember offhand. It's been a while. I'm not spoiling anything because I'm just guessing from what, you know, we've seen. Voss, the only person we've really seen be given a name to. And, you know, again, as I said, it seemed kind of like he was hitting on his friend's girlfriend right next to him. So, again, I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out to be Voss. We'll see, because, again, it's been a while. So I don't really remember now who it was. But we'll find out together, won't we? But Taryn is telling Adam that, you know, he wants him to lead his people, since Adam's the only one he can trust at this point. Since, you know, Adam's helped him escape, and Adam wasn't around to betray him, so he knows Adam isn't the traitor. And Lawson tells him that, you know, the people will follow him with Taryn's endorsements. Again, Adam is a stranger in a strange land. He's new to this group. And again, going to race relations, if you will, these people are kind of a yellowish green looking, whereas Ray is Caucasian and looks nothing all other than being, you know, humanoid like people he's with. So it says a lot that, you know, with Taryn's word, they're going to trust him. And again, maybe it's just me reading too much into it, being 46 years old. I was reading way too much into it, but I think it's saying a little something about race relations and how we can all get along. But as Ray leaves, he gets socked, and him and Voss fights. And again, he's saying that he doesn't trust Adam is why he's attacking him. He says he believes he's with Kallax's men. So this may be against what I was saying a minute ago about Voss being the traitor. Or maybe Voss overheard what was being said and using this to try to take out his competition, if you will. Again, I don't think we know this issue what happens. What do you guys think? I think we have until next month to figure it out, so. But again, so they're fighting, and Ray knocks him down. Because again, Ray's a superhero. He spent years, you know, learning how to fight. He's learned with Batman and like Superman. All these other heroes have taught him a few things here and there. So, he's a pretty good hand-to-hand fighter. He doesn't just use just his powers. So, and as we're going along, let's take a break here on page 20, right after page 21. Just talk about a couple of the ads that come across real quick. There's an ad for Grits. Grits, one of the things I never did sell growing up. I remember these ads. And there's DC Coming Comics on July 28th. It tells us what's coming up. Jonah Hex 77, World's Finest 296. Sort of that into Arion, Detective Comics, All-Star Squadron, Adventures of Superboy, and Captain Carrot Amazing Zoo Crew. Oh, I miss Action Comics with the Phantom Zenders. I just kind of miss these little blurbs in the middle of the comic with what's coming, and yet the meanwhile by Dick Giordano. I miss these things from these old comics. But go back to our action where Adam and Voss is fighting, and I like this. You know, he's saying that he's on Terran's side. I don't care what you say. And he socks, and he's like, "But that doesn't mean I'm yours." As he knocks him down, and Voss grabs for an arrow, poisoned arrow, because he lands right next to it. And I like this ending on page, what page is this? Page 22. I'd look at the previous page, because the writing, the number's kind of blurred here. Adam's leaping at Voss, while Voss grabs it and holds it up. And then we cut away to where, as I mentioned, the synopsis, Jean's laying in her bedroom, and she calls Paul, and Paul, being such a swell guy he is, invites himself over to help comfort her. I'm doing comfort in quotes. I know they're friends, they're law partners. And I'm going to play a message here from Ben Avery, a fellow podcaster and friend, talk about the Tolkien Laurie thing. So I'm not going to say too much about it right now, but again, this doesn't pit, in my opinion, it doesn't pit Gina too much of a good light. Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean, she believes her husband's dead. So she calls her ex-boyfriend or boyfriend, whatever he is, the guy that she cheated on her husband with, and he's volunteering to come over and comfort her. We know how this is going to end up. At least I'm pretty sure I do, but yes, I remember to mention, I'll wait until I get to the letter section. I'll talk about this a little bit more. And then we get to the end here where it says, the time for waiting is definitely over. Next morning's end. And that is the issue. Again, overall, as I said, I enjoy the artwork. I'm enjoying the story itself. Like I say, Jean's not coming across the best in the story so far. She's cheated on Ray. And now at the end of the second issue, we actually find out he's dead. She's calling her boyfriend, and he's going to come over and comfort her. But again, I don't want to say too much right now. Ben's got some comments to make on this. I'll then make his comments, then I'll follow up with that. But I'm really enjoying this series, rereading it. I enjoyed it the first time I read it. This leads up to the Power of the Atom series, which I'll be covering down the road here in a couple months. But so far, I'm really enjoying this. What do you guys think? Go ahead and send me an email to head@headspeaks.com and let me know what you think about this. But for right now, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Head Speaks will be back after these important messages.
Hi, gang. It's Adam Worth from The Bad Advice Show, and it's official. Critics, fellow podcasters, and fans alike have voted, and The Bad Advice Show has won the 2016 award for Best New Podcast. Detractors called us the most dangerous show in podcasting, but thanks to you, the fans, this little podcast that could has shown them all. To help celebrate, our podcasting colleagues from around the world have sent us in congratulatory messages, like this gem from Aaron the Head Moss of the Head Speaks Network.
Yeah, I enjoy listening to the Bad Advice Podcast while I'm going to the bathroom. Because, you know, when in Rome.
But wait, there's more.
This is Ryan Daly from the Secret Origins Podcast. My ex-wife's divorce attorney calls the Bad Advice Show a gold mine.
And still others have sent contributions in to show their reverence.
So we're going to record the next episode of the Negative One Podcast in a second, right, Matt?
Yeah.
All right. Did you hear that we got a new podcast on the network?
No, I heard that we just adopted some bullshit that no one's going to listen to.
Yeah, it sounds about right. It's called The Bad Advice Show, and it really is shit.
Is it a bad advice show?
Bad advice show.
Do I have to?
Yes!
Hello, this is Gene Hendricks from the Two True Freaks Network.
Louder and more natural!
I would just like to tell everyone that the Bad Advice Show is a wonderful podcast, and everyone should listen to it. Can I have my dog back now?
You can find the Bad Advice Show wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. So search for us and subscribe now so that you too can say, I was into the Bad Advice Show before it went mainstream.
The Bad Advice Show is a great podcast, as long as you hate yourself.
Enter, one man leaves.
I must break.
Go ahead, make my day.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hey,
Hey, everybody, it's Roy Charlemagne Cleary here from the Silver and Gold Podcast. I want to tell you about a new show we got coming out called DC v. Marvel. We have this thing called a randomizer. It randomly selects a Marvel character and pits them versus a random selected DC character. Whenever this happens, it compels me and my co-host from Silver and Gold, Jay Jones, to tell you who's going to win said combat because we can't reset the randomizer until we do so. We don't do it alone. We bring in a third guest to help analyze the fight. So check that out coming soon on the Silver and Gold podcast feed. The beta test episodes are going up now, but in the future, we're going to have more refined episodes with some of your favorite podcasters, super comic fans, captains of industry. They're all going to come and join us on DC v. Marvel. So look for those soon on the Silver and Gold podcast feed.
Can I talk?
You've said enough, Jay Jones.
We didn't say anything.
Yeah, but we're going to do the podcast now.
I want to say something.
No more talking.
And now back to Head Speaks.
Now, let's move on to...
On your mark, get set. We're riding on the internet. The internet is really, really great.
For porn.
I got a fast connection so I don't have to wait.
For porn. What?
There's always some new site.
For porn.
I browse all day and night.
For porn.
It's like I'm surfing at the speed of light.
For porn.
Internet porn, Roman orgy scenes. Internet porn, dominatrix queens. Internet porn, girl on girl on girl on girl on girl on guy on sheep.
Bet you're going surfing on the internet.
Where is Head going?
This week on Where's Head Going, we're going to look briefly at another podcast I listen to. This one's called Saturday Morning Fever. Saturday Morning Fever is from the Fire and Water Podcast Networks. And this is where Rob Kelly and a couple of his guests look at Saturday morning cartoons of the past. They've had one episode so far where they looked at the movies of Super Friends. And actually, I think it was the challenge of the Super Friends, to be specific. And like I say, it's only one podcast in so far, or one episode in. It's only a sporadic podcast, so they're not coming out very often. But I am looking forward to hearing more from this. As you guys know from the last like 5-6 episodes of Head Speaks, I have a fondness for the Saturday morning cartoons and things of my youth. So I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more from Rob and his guests on Saturday Morning Fever. But check it out. It's part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Even it's on iTunes and your favorite feed catcher, I'm sure. Or on the Fire and Water Network podcast website. Just do a search for that. But yeah, check out the podcast and let them know what you think. And now, without further ado, let's move on to the next segment.
Mail time.
Mail's here.
Here's the mail. It never fails. It makes me want to wag my tail. When it comes, I want to wail.
You've got mail.
And here we are with Head's mailbag. Let's start off with Twitters and tweets and twites. There is, on Twitter, the following people retweeted or liked or commented on our tweets. There's Comic Book Scumbag, The Hammer Strikes, Two Chew Freaks, and now following us on Twitter is The First Bat, Darkseid, Michael Dabb, Comics and Whatever, and Extra Feature Podcasts. Thanks for following us, guys. Hope you guys are enjoying the shows. And again, this is on Twitter. This is on the Headcast Network itself. I don't have one specifically for Head Speaks, so this is just over... And if they make mentions of specific shows, I'll put it in that show. Ones that aren't so quite so specific, well, they just go under the Head Speaks banner. And over on Facebook, for the Headcast Network, we have the following people that's liked or commented or whatever on our posts. There is Pat Sampson, friend of the show, Ryan Daly, one of my co-hosts from the G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, Dan Dougal, Gene Hendricks, my buddy over there on the Hammer Strikes, the Fire and Water Podcast Network, and Michael Wagner. Also on Facebook, Pat Sampson made a comment. He says, another great episode. I enjoyed when you went over a few different ads. It brings back memories of a simpler time for me. Well, I'm glad you enjoyed that, Pat. Again, I mentioned a couple ads this time. Hope if you like those two, let me know. And I don't have any emails or anything, but I will. I did have an MP3 file from a fellow podcaster. This is from Ben Avery over at Comic Book Time Machine, Welcome to Level 7, and a couple of other shows. He wrote in talking about the Atom, so I'm going to go ahead and play his comments.
Hey, Aaron, it's me, Ben Avery from the Comic Book Time Machine podcast, also from Strangers and Aliens podcast and Welcome to Level 7 podcast. Three different podcasts, three different flavors, but one me. Or something like that. I don't know. Hey, I'm calling about the Sword of the Atom, man. Calling, recording, whatever. It's about the Sword of the Atom. This is a comic book that I really, really enjoy, and I'm so glad you're covering it. It falls into that category of superheroes in fantasy worlds. This is shared by the Incredible Hulk and his own Heart of the Atom series. You have the Sword of the Atom, Heart of the Atom. I could see a podcast coming out of that maybe, but, and then there's also, the Doom, it's the Iron Man, where Dr. Doom and him go to the Arthurian legend time. And there's a couple other ones. Those are the three main ones though, that I know of and that I really enjoy. I mean, there's others like when, Superman went to Mars. I mean, John Carter, Warlord of Mars, and Flash Gordon are also examples of this, but these are where they take characters who are known, throw them into a place where it's weird and different and exciting because it's weird and different. And for me, Sword of the Atom is, I think, the best of the three in some ways, but in other ways it's not. And it's best of the three because of the imaginative world. It's been a while since I've read them, so I'm going off of memory right now. I have reread issue number one because of your coverage, and I'm going to be rereading the other issues along with you, but that means I don't remember exactly what happened with some of the later things, but I remember really, really liking those later issues. However, the things that I did not like, that I remembered not liking, I still don't like when I read this first issue, and that's basically all the stuff with his wife. Now, what happened with his wife had to happen, and this is why. They needed him to have a romantic interest where he goes. So they needed him to be in a place where he is, where we accept that he is going to be romantically linked with someone other than his wife. And so what did they have to do? They had to separate him from his wife, but not just separate him from his wife. They needed to do so in such a way that we accept that they're done and that he's not the bad guy in the situation, because we have to accept him as a lead that is not doing something that we find morally icky, cheating on his wife. And I mean, there's ways you can do it. One would be kill her off. One would be make him think that she's dead, which brings up some other issues later on when he finds out that she's not. And then there's this, where she has cheated on him and she has in her mind been separated from him for a long time, and it makes her look bad, although they do try and make her not look quite as bad, but it doesn't make him look bad, except that he's been the superhero. And how can you not like a superhero? You know? And so that's the... I understand why they're doing all this, but I don't like it. I mean, this whole issue I only like because it's set up. And this is, I remember this from the last couple of times that I read it. It's been a couple years now since the last time I read it, but I remember this every time I've read this through. I remember this first issue just not hitting it well, because honestly, it's all of the stuff that happens in the regular world. The plane crash that just happens to damage his belt. It's all these different things it's all set up. And once we finally get there, I'm cool with it because we're there. But it's all of the contrived things that have to happen to get us there. But I remember loving the swashbuckling adventure that's coming. I remember something towards the end where I didn't feel like it ended well. We'll get there. but my pacing is just going to be whatever your pacing is, buddy. And I'm just going to enjoy it along with you. And maybe afterward, I'll pull out my Incredible Hulk Heart of the Atom. Maybe I'll pull that out right now, actually. And but first, I have to read issue 2, and I can't wait until you cover that. And like I said, I like what this issue, what the series does. But this issue, I'm just not a fan of it because of all the things that have to click into place in order for us to accept that the Atom is trapped in this world. And he's trapped in this world at that height. And not only that, he's separated from his wife in such a way that we accept it for him. And it just, it makes her look really, really bad. And, you know, every situation like that, both parties are at fault. It might be 1% and 99%, but they try and have their cake and eat it too here. And it just doesn't sit well with me until we actually finally get into the adventure. And the other thing I seem to remember is a lot more happening back home than I wanted to happen back home. I just wanted to stay in this world. But, you know, he's like John Carter. I mean, he's a super being in a fantasy realm. And I love John Carter. If you listen to my Comic Book Time Machine, where I'm covering the Marvel comics, the Star Wars stuff, it's all the licensed books that they did during Star Wars. And John Carter is one that I've been covering. What a magnificent and exciting discovery for me. I didn't start reading John Carter until when I started the podcast a couple of years ago, maybe not quite 2 years ago. And man, oh man, oh man, I've really, really enjoyed John Carter. And it's hitting that pulpy, swashbuckling adventure, just that perfect sweet spot. And Sword of the Atom is one of those that, like I said, it fits into that. So I can't wait to hear what you have to say about issue 2, and I'll be right there along with you.
And again, that was Ben Avery from Comic Book Time Machine. Several other shows, definitely check out Ben's shows. But thank you very much for saying that in, Ben. I enjoyed hearing your thoughts, and you make a lot of very good points. I mean, yes, Gene was made to cheat on Ray by the writer for story's sake. But having said that, I haven't read a lot of the earlier Atom stories, but I listened to some of Diablo Frank's, one of his podcasts. He's covered a couple of those older issues of Atom. And again, I haven't read him yet, but according to Diablo Frank, Gene hasn't always been the best person anyways. From his coloring of her, she is very much a self-centered, very much of a what's-in-it-for-me type person. So I may be wrong. It's been a little while since I listened to those episodes, but I think he even called her a... Again, I've got those stories on my computer to read. It's just with doing 4 podcasts, working, my family, trying to be current comics, and everything else I got going on in my life. It's hard to read some of these back issues I've got to read, so... But as if I ever get a chance to read them, maybe I can find out for myself if Gene is actually that bad of a person or if Diablo Frank was just exaggerating a bit. But per Diablo Frank's description of her, her cheating on Ray actually sounds very appropriate and very, very much in character for her. So I don't know much I'd fault the... Again, I'm going to say fault the writer in quotes for writing that out that way. And again, so I see where you're coming from, Ben, and I appreciate your thoughts on that. But again, having said that, having listened to Diablo Frank's a couple of his earlier episodes of the Atom he's covered, I don't know how out of character that is for her. I mean, it sounds like it may be right up her alley to, you know, blame Ray, you know, because she cheated. And like I said last episode, when she said, you know, we're adults, you can't be running off playing superhero. You knew, and again, I know I'm taking this out on Gene, the character, when the writer wrote her that way, but that's why he wrote her that way. So again, Gene, you knew that Ray was a superhero. You knew he was the Atom. I mean, you can't marry a man that's, you know, that you know he's got a secret identity as a superhero, and then when the going gets tough, say, oh, well, it's your fault for being a superhero. It'd be different, like I said in the last episode, it'd be different if Ray kept it a secret and she found out after they were married. But if I'm not mistaken, she found out relatively quickly that he was the Atom and before they got married. So you've got no one to blame but yourself. Again, I need to get to read those older issues of the Atom so I can see how in character or out of character this is for her. But Otherwise, everything else, actually, you made some great points, and ignoring those old issues, yes, what you said is very valid, Ben. And like I said, I'm glad that you're listening along. I'm glad you're following along. I don't know if I've read that Incredible Hulk, Heart of the Atom story. I need to find that and read that. I may have it in my boxes out in the garage. That's a process. But anyways, hopefully keep listening along. Hopefully you'll keep listening as I get through, as I'll do these four issues, then I'll do the three specials, and then I'll go into Power of the Atom. Definitely, Ben, write in again. Let me know what you think. Again, you can either send me an email or you can send me another MP3. And for anyone else listening, go ahead and let me know what you think, just like Ben did. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Again, either email me or send an MP3 file like Ben did to head@headspeaks.com. And if you send an MP3, I'll play your thoughts on the air. If you send a letter, I'll read that on the air. But I guess that's enough for that. Again, thank you very much, Ben, for writing in. I appreciate that. And now for Head's final thoughts. I just want to give a mention to DC in the 80s. That's DCINTHE80S.blogspot.ca. Online buddy of mine, Justin, he runs that site, and he talks all things 80s-ish. He's had some interviews. He's posted some of my links up there before. Justin's a great guy. It's a great site. And currently, I've been helping him do some work. Again, it's not related to Adam, but it's related to my podcast. He's reviewing the G.I. Joe Impel cards from the early 90s. Yes, it's a bit outside of his focus, you know, what he's looking at. But since it's G.I. Joe, it started in the 80s, it gets a pass. And again, I've made some additions to his thoughts on that. So he's got two articles up so far on the Impel card. So definitely check them out. Go to DCinThe80s.blogspot.ca and look at all his articles. But definitely look at the G.I. Joe Impel cards. It's a great article. Got some great thoughts in there. And also, while I'm talking, make sure you rate and review us on iTunes. That's a good way, if you like the show, that's a good way for people to hear about the show and to find the show. If you rate us, if you give us a 5-star rating, I'd appreciate that. And leave your thoughts. Let me know if you got the show on there. Like I've said, this episode and every episode, you can email me at head@headspeaks.com. I'd love to hear from you. You can go to the blog at head.headspeaks.com. Leave a message on there. You can go to the Facebook page, which is just look for Head Speaks. Or you can look for the Headcast Network on Facebook. And be sure to let me know what you think about it. And while you're at it, check out my other podcasts. I've got, besides this one, I've got my G.I. Joe, World American Headcast. I've got Task Force X. My next episode of that, I plan on reviewing the Suicide Squad movie. And then I've got my Starman Manhunter Adventure Hour podcast, where I look at the 1980s Starman starring Will Smith comic. Will Smith. Will Payton comic, and The Manhunter, starring Mark Shaw by John Ostringer, the same guy that wrote Suicide Squad. Again, check out those podcasts, and occasionally my daughter posts her podcast. I've got a beautiful 8-year-old daughter named Alexis Moss, and she's got her own podcast that she posts every once in a while called Alexis Speaks. So check out her podcast, where she talks about everything she likes, anywhere from Dog with a Blog to Supergirl to whatever else, you know, catches her fancy. And almost forgot, I'm going to throw in my final song after my credits. So stay tuned. I'm going to play the final credits. I'm going to play a promo for one of Ben's shows. And then I'm going to play my final song. The final song this time is Just a Friend by Biz Markie. I enjoy that song, so I'm going to play it for you guys. So again, stay tuned for the credits. An ad for Comic Book Time Machine. And then settle back and relax with Just a Friend by Biz Markie. I guess that's it for this episode of Head Speaks. Send us an email, visit us on the websites. Until next time, remember, Head has spoken. We'll be right back.
thank you for listening to another fantastic episode of Head Speaks. Hope you enjoyed it. If so, let me know. Drop me an email to head@headspeaks.com or visit our home at head.headspeaks.com. You can also visit and talk with me on Facebook and Google+, both under Head Speaks. You can also send an MP3 file with your thoughts, and I can play that on the air. And you can also get more of me on my other podcasts. Be sure to listen to Task Force X, where monthly I look at John Ostrander's Suicide Squad and Paul Kupperberg's Checkmate comics from the 80s and early 90s. Also, over on G.I. Joe, a Real American Headcast, my podcasting friends Ryan Daly and Kyle Benning, along with myself, are looking at all of the G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero comics, and related titles from Marvel and IDW. All of my headcasts are available on iTunes and Stitcher, along with the respective blogs and my main page at headspeaks.com. All comments, thoughts, and opinions expressed on Head Speaks are owned wholly by the speaker of said comments and do not express the opinions of Head Speaks, unless, of course, I'm the one making the comments. Head Speaks, Task Force X, and G.I. Joe, Real American Headcast, are all part of the Headcast family. So join us next month for another wonderful episode of Head Speaks. Until then, I'll see you in the funny pages. Good night.
Guys, we finally developed our time machine. Should we use it to go back and see how Stonehenge was built?
Or become friends with Hitler and convince him to stay in art school?
Or we could go back in time and get the comic books we missed.
Yeah!
The Comic Book Time Machine. A journey back in time to explore comic books. Good and bad. Whether from 7 decades ago or 7 days ago. Join our journey at comicbooktimemachine.com.
Have you ever met a girl that you tried to date, but a year to make love, she wanted you to wait? Let me tell you a story in my situation. I was talking to this girl from the U.S. nation. The way that I met her was on tour at a concert. She had long hair and a short miniskirt. I just got on stage dripping, pouring with sweat. I was walking through the crowd, and guess who I met? I whispered in her ear, come to the picture booth so I can ask you some questions to see if you're 100 proof. I asked her name, she said, blah, blah, blah. She had 9-10 pants and a very big bra. I took a couple of flicks and she was enthused. I said, how do you like the show? She said, I was very amused. I started throwing bass, she started throwing back mid-range. But when I sprung the question, she acted kind of strange. Because when I asked, do you have a man? She tried to pretend. She said, no, I don't. I only have a friend. Come on. I'm not even going for it. This is what I'm going to say.
You got what I need, but you say he just a friend, and you say he just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need, but you say he just a friend, but you say he just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need, but you say he just a friend, but you say he.
Blah blah's work for it. At this time, I thought just having a friend couldn't be no crime. Cause I have friends, and that's a fact. Like Agnes, Agatha, Jermaine, and Jack. Forget about that, let's go into the story about a girl named blah 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 that adore me. So we started talking, getting familiar, spending a lot of time so we can build a relationship or some understanding how it's gonna be in the future we was planning. Everything sounded so dandy and sweet. I had no idea I was in for a treat. After this was established, everything was cool. The tour was over and she went back to school. I called every day to see how she was doing. Every time that I call her, it seemed something was brewing. I called the room, a guy picked up, and then I called again. I said, yo, who is that? Oh, he's just a friend. Don't give me that. Don't even give me that. Just watch this.
You got what I need, but you say he's just a friend, and you say he's just a friend. Oh, baby, you got what I need.
college on a surprise visit to see my girl that was so exquisite. It was a school day, I know she was there, the first semester of the school year. I went to a gate to ask where was the dorm. This guy made me fill out a visitor's form. He told me where it was, and I was on my way to see my baby doll, I was happy to say. I arrived in front of the dormitory. Yo, could you tell me where is door 3? They showed me where it was for the moment. I didn't know I was in for such an event, so I came to a room and opened the door. Oh, snap! Guess what I saw? I felt a tongue kissing my girl in the mouth. I was so in shock, my heart went down south. So please listen to the message that I sent. Don't ever talk to a girl who says she just has a friend. Has a friend. Has a friend. Has a friend.